Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
Oh, it's a special day in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
You can imagine my surprise when I pulled into the parking lot and I saw Dora there, and I went, oh yeah, Paul's away.
Yeah. your ray of sunshine for the day.
My ray of sunshine.
Even as we're high-fiving in the parking lot, Steve and I.
Even though your car was doing strange things.
Oh. My car always does strange things. That's the beauty of a Tesla. You can program a number of things on it to have some fun and laugh.
Let me just say that if you're ever near Frank in a parking lot and he walks away from his car to lock it, get out of sight.
Beware. Beware. Yep.
The sounds coming from that car, you never know what's going to happen next.
What a week, eh?
What a week is right. What a way to wrap up January.
Boy. Lots going on in the financial markets and, you know, Bank of Canada.
So have the rates peaked now? Is that it? Is that all?
Mr. Macklem certainly kind of said that in so many words. I mean, he's still concerned.
And then he throws in that other line again.
Yeah, he's still concerned about underlying inflation and... But I think they need to open their eyes and see that Canadians are hurting. He said as much. He goes, I understand the pain the Canadians are going through. Well, if you understand it, then maybe you need to do something about it. He stopped short, though, of really saying what the truth is. And the truth is that unless government spending pulls back, the inflation numbers will continue to be where they're at because they are the sole reason. Shelter costs are high, and he talked about it. And you know, the U.S. came out, too, with theirs, and one staggering statistic stood out where they now include this in their inflation number. Gambling.
Really?
Really. Gambling is part of their, and that's why their inflation's up, because gambling is way up in the U.S.
Well, which makes sense, you know, when you're in troubled times, you look for the easy way out, right?
You do. Well, and I think it's more accessible. If you look at sports, I'm a big, big Raptors fan. Every single minute of every
it's
part of
sporting.
The game. It's all sporting gambling.
It's all sport gambling. Yeah. It is incredible the amount of sports gambling that's now above the table. It's always been around, obviously.
Right,
you have to
course.
Do it through a bookie.
Yep.
Or if you were in Vegas. That's right. The only way you can do sports gambling. Now you can do it from anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's incredible at a time when Canadians are struggling most that another avenue is opened up for them to potentially, you know, put some of their money at risk. So... It's
that's what now, four in a row that he's kept it the same?
So July was the last increase, so there would have been four. Yeah, four in a row. Next one is March 6th, which again, the chances, you know, the economists put these tables out and they give it a 15% chance of prime rate coming down. So very, very low that March 6th will have any news because we'll only have one more month's worth of stats. The interesting one will be in May. The first week of May will be the interesting one because then we'll have 2 months more of data.
So we got nothing in June.
No, we have June as well. So we have nothing in April. In March we have nothing. March and April we don't have anything in May, and then we have it in June.
Okay.
So the expectations are high that in June there'll be a rate cut if it hasn't happened in April. So.
But he's going to really have to balance because unemployment is going to start soaring now.
Should. Yeah. You know, you would think. And it's a lagging.
There's a lag. I was just going to say.
Yeah. Yep. It's a lagging effect on unemployment. So all the layoffs that were happening in the fall now will start to show up. So they don't show up for a few months because obviously there's packages and it doesn't come across as people being unemployed. But the numbers are disturbing. But what's even more disturbing is what your eyes tell you and what you see and what people tell you, how they're feeling. And we're not talking about people that were all struggling. I'm talking about people that full families of four or five where two employed adults are in the house and they have done nothing different than what they were doing pre-pandemic. And yet they're struggling now despite the fact that they've got more equity in their home, which is a good sign for them if they're homeowners. But they're struggling and they're almost living paycheck to paycheck where before they'd be able to set some money aside for RSPs and savings where now they're not able to do that. That's the concern.
And don't forget, kids are staying at home longer too, so that's an extra added expense.
Right. Well, of course.
Right. Well, and grocery costs are up. And
way up.
And, you know,
utilities.
Utilities, paycheck to paycheck, but almost like slightly in the red. So credit card debt is just increasing and increasing and increasing.
Record levels, both in Canada and the U.S. Yeah. And again, just to emphasize, in the U.S., the reason they're not having the shelter cost increases that we have here is because anybody and most Americans took advantage of the low interest rate cycle that happened in 2020, 2021, locked into long-term 30-year mortgages. So they don't have renewals coming up, unlike Canada, which has got millions of renewals coming up this year, millions more next year, and the big concern will be in 2026. So 2024, not so bad, because those people that own homes in 2019, if they bought their homes in 2019, have accrued tons of equity.
Of course, yeah.
But what was their rate then?
3.29 average.
So not a huge, well, you're about a point and a half, right?
A point and a half to 2 points, so it's enough. I mean, it's enough to, if you're already struggling to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. The good thing you've got in that scenario is that you've built up some equity in your home, significant equity, that you can pull some of the equity out, amortize it over 30 years to keep your payments fairly close to where they are right now. So that's the good thing you have going for you on that
side. But pulling your equity out costs you money too.
Well, it does. But at the end of the day, it's all about cash flow. Most Canadians are concerned with cash. This is all about cash flow. We're getting lots of calls from Canadians that have those 1.89 to 2.25% mortgages, and they've got this equity, but they need extra money. So, you know, we're able to find home equity lines of credits for them. We're able to, in some cases, we got to go to private mortgages for them. But it's significantly better than breaking your low interest rate mortgage to take out new money. The idea is what you want to try and do is keep that term until the end, take out the new second mortgage and try to match the term so that at the very least, when they both mature, you can put them both together and then figure out. At that point, the interest rate should be much lower than they are today.
And if you're not renewing, just the line of credit is what, 7.7 now?
Yeah, 7.7 interest only. And again, it's high, but you know, you're not giving up your 2% mortgage, and that's going to be the majority of your debt, so leave that alone.
So you would go that way?
Oh, 100%. Never give that up at all. You try to port it, you try to get a second behind it, I would never give that up because those rates are never coming back, likely. Yeah.
But I think as Canadians, too, we tend to make our mortgage payments, right? There's not a lot of defaulting in Canada. And so anything that as a population you can do to keep your rates, to keep paying, we're doing, right? So cutting back.
Yeah, it's the first priority for most people.
Absolutely.
Is the mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Are we seeing more defaults now?
We're seeing more defaults, but certainly nothing that we're still at or below levels of pre-pandemic. So we're not now. I think we're going to start to see more as we get deeper into 2024 and into 2025. And those people that have mortgages that are renewing, it's a little bit more of a struggle when you got to increase $300, $400, $500. Keep in mind that all this extra money, so this is where economists differ on what they think. If a family's having to renew their mortgage and now it costs them $500 more a month, well, that money is just not coming out of thin air. That's $500 they're not spending, discretionary spending that they don't have anymore because they got to pay their mortgage.
Yeah.
So that's where the economy is going to feel it. So that's why I say there's lagging effects that are happening and we're not quite there yet. You know, Dora will talk about how many listings are out there. There's just not a lot out there because people are saying to themselves, we'd love to upgrade to the next home, but we can't afford it right now. We need to wait it out until the interest rates get back in line for us to be able to do it because we've got some equity, but we can't afford the month-to-month cost of going into a more expensive home.
But that's my question for you now. Do you wait for rates to come down and then house prices will probably start going up any time now? So how do you play that?
Well, I think, there's been a lot of apprehension about getting into the market, both from buyers and from sellers. And so I think, you know, as early as September of last year, we saw a lot of people going to the sidelines where buyers were thinking, okay, I'm going to park it. I'm going to wait to see what happens with interest rates. If they hold, what's going to happen in 2024? And the same thing with sellers. And there were sellers that had their homes up for sale and were, you know, in air quotes, waiting for their price. And some of them did get it, right? So that was good. But a lot of people just pulled back. And I think with the announcement that we had this week, there is a lot of optimism out there. At least I can see it. So I think buyers are going to get back into the market. And everybody remembers, you know, COVID times, everybody remembers those massive increases in pricing as the interest rate dropped. And I don't think anybody wants to be in that situation again. And I'm not implying it will be that crazy or that frenzied.
Yeah, we'll probably never see that again.
No, right? I don't think so, nor should we. But I do think that there is a very large pool of people out there that are preparing for getting back into the market in 24. So if you think, you know, baby boomers, they own 60-some percent of the properties in Ottawa. And, excuse me, if you were thinking of selling in 2019, you probably haven't sold until now because of the pandemic, because of all of the ups and downs of the economy. And so there's, you know, there is, I believe, a pent-up portion of the inventory that's going to come on the market.
Well, eventually, as they get older.
Eventually, as they get older.
But is there any advantage to selling your home now if you're a boomer and getting into a townhome that costs almost the same?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Like, unless you're going to a place without stairs,
right? It depends on lifestyle, and it depends on maintenance costs, and it depends on all sorts of things. But, I mean, it's the biggest challenge for baby boomers is I'm going to sell this, you know, forever home. I've been in it for 25, 35 years. I love my house. It's this great big house, and I'm going to sell it and pay more to get smaller in a neighborhood that I'm not so familiar with. And so they're just holding on to these properties, and that's having a trickle-down effect on everything else.
Hence why we've seen reverse mortgages spike
over the last few imagine,
years.
Yeah.
Because you've got senior individuals that don't want to leave their house and want some cash flow because your pension doesn't get you as far as it should because it hasn't matched with what everything else has gone up by. So you tap into the equity of your home by taking out a reverse mortgage, which we've done plenty of, and way more requests for reverse mortgages than I've ever seen before. And it kind of makes sense for some people because they don't want to leave that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's the house that they had their kids in, and now their grandkids are visiting them. They don't have an appetite to get out yet. They can still kind of maintain it. So they stay in it, and they take out a reverse mortgage. And the benefit of a reverse mortgage is that it does the exact reverse of what a typical mortgage does. A typical mortgage, you're making payments, and your balance comes down. On a reverse mortgage, you're not making payments, but your balance goes up. But they only lend you a certain percentage depending on the age and the value of your home. And basically, they're still protected, but you don't have to make any payments.
Does it make sense if you want to stay in the place for, say, another extra 5 years to get a reverse mortgage?
Well, I think it does, depending on your cash flow situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, you've got, you know, we've even got individuals that have stock accounts that, you know, their accountant will tell them you're better off to borrow on a reverse mortgage and take the money out of your stock account. You can do that later, but the tax advantages right now are better for you to take out a reverse mortgage and not make any payments and live in your house and just keep your stock account growing.
Interesting angle. 521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Dora in for Paul. Frank is here. To the phones we go and say hello to Margaret. Hello, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi. So I have two questions.
I'm sorry you only get one that we have.
Okay, well, I'll try for the second one, but here's the first one. There's a couple that are going to move in together, and he owns a small apartment and she rents. Now, he's going to sell his apartment, and they want to do tenants in common. And so she has never owned and he has owned before. And I'm wondering, is she still considered a first home buyer?
She is. She is. When you go to the lawyers, as long as you let the lawyer know, like the benefits of first time home buyer or land transfer tax rebate in Ontario for $4,000.
Yeah.
If she is buying and they're 50-50, then they would get a $2,000 rebate instead of the whole $4,000 because he's owned before. So that she's eligible to take up to $35,000 out of RSP.
Okay.
And if she's got that new first-time home buyer savings plan that's out there that you're allowed to put $8,000 per year, then she can take money out of there as well. So those are the three benefits.
Can they also do like a 70-30 split? Because he has all the money, so he would probably pay his part of the apartment, like the new place, off, and she would be paying the mortgage, and she would want only 30%. She's not that rich.
Yeah, that she allowed? Can do that. So again, they can do that. So the recommendation that I would make, now again, if he has no mortgage whatsoever, and the entire mortgage is hers,
right.
then I would say, you know, you don't need to. There's lenders that have what are called separate mortgages. So you can have like two different mortgages.
Okay.
So that if somebody puts more down payment than the other and they know what their payments are, you have to acknowledge the fact, though, they have to acknowledge the fact that they're equally on the debt. So they might have a side contract where she's making the payments, but his name will be on the mortgage as well, even though he doesn't owe anything. But, you know, technically, if they own the property together, not the lawyers, I know the lawyers can do a 70-30 split on ownership if they want.
Okay.
So they can do that. Or they might be 50-50 since she's paying the mortgage. That's what they have to figure out with the lawyer. But as far as the lender's concerned, it's very important to understand that the lender does not distinguish 70-30, 60-40. They want nothing to do with that. If both parties are on the title, both parties are on the mortgage, they're equally responsible for that mortgage payment.
With those two mortgages, do you get statements on both so you're aware of what the partner's doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
We imagine.
So I've had circumstances where, you know, one party's putting $100,000 down and the other party's putting $50,000 down. So, so we can do the separate kind of terms of mortgages. And then the payment still comes out of one bank account.
But you could
set up a joint bank account and then you each, you know, put your portion into that bank account as to what the mortgage payment is.
Okay.
So that's
and my other question is if they split up, and she was, you know, doing the 30-70. So if they split up and sold the place, he would still get his 70% of the new, you know, let's say the price went up in the house, the new, and she would only get 30, right?
Or would he get 50% from the day they buy?
After,
yes. So again, I mean, that's why it's so important to meet with the lawyer and put everything in place. The way it normally works, so let's say that, you know, they're buying a $500,000 property.
Okay.
So he's putting his $250,000 in, so his $250,000 is paid for, and then she's going to have a mortgage for $100,000. She's going to put $150,000 and they have a $100,000 mortgage.
Okay.
So the way it normally works is that all the growth, if they're splitting their bills 50-50, so utilities, the taxes 50-50, then it's fair to say that if the property is now worth $600,000 from the $500,000, now it's worth $600,000 when they're ready to sell it because they're splitting up.
Yeah.
They should equally divide that $100,000 50-50.
Right.
He still gets his original 70% or whatever. Yeah. But again, that's assuming that they're going 50-50 on all the bills in the house, the food, the utilities. If they're going 70-30, then it's fair. But I would put that on a contract with the lawyer and make sure that it's in writing at a time when they actually get along versus when they break up, when they're not getting along. Because then it's much more difficult to put that in place.
For sure.
Especially after 3 years, because then you're common law.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's different.
Well, that's even negotiable. Some people say a year is common law and 2 years.
Definitely a conversation for the lawyer beforehand.
Yeah. The sooner you do it, the better.
Okay. And as you said earlier, she would be able to collect some of the benefit of the first time
home. Oh, 100%. If she's a first time home buyer, never owned a home, she can get the land transfer tax rebate. Oh.
So she would get the percentage of what she put in as a down payment. Is that the idea?
She would get the
percentage if she's putting in, say, 30% of the down payment.
Yep.
She would only get 30% of the
land transfer tax. No, the land transfer tax is 50-50. Because as far as everybody's concerned, I mean, they're buying the property together. It's just the individual contract that they have among each other where she's going to be paying the mortgage because he's paid his portion entirely and she hasn't paid hers entirely.
Okay, that answered a lot of questions. Now, my second question is, this is another couple I know, and they sold the principal residence and got a really good price. They sold it a year ago, and they took that money and they decided they'd invest it because they're seniors, they're older, and they're now renting. But they have a family cottage, and of course, when they sold that place, they got it was a principal residence, so they had no tax, right?
Now
they have this cottage, and they want to know, and they live in the cottage part time of the year. It's just on the Quebec side, and they're wondering when that could become a principal residence, and it would have no tax when it was sold or given to their family members.
Good question for an accountant, though.
It is, but I think it depends too on if it's a four-season home. Because if it's not a four-season home.
It's a four-season home.
But they're living somewhere else. They only go to the cottage from time to time.
They rent, and they only, and they use the cottage mostly, of course, in the summer months. But in the winter, they stay closer to town because they're older and it's just more convenient. You know,
is it a six-month split, though?
No, it's not an exact six-month split. No, it's more,
capital gains would probably apply because it's a secondary property. But again, that's a question for an accountant, and let the accountant determine, you know, when they sell, obviously, when they sell.
Like, it depends on how long they've had it as, like, they've got rid of the first principal residence, which is just a year now.
Yeah.
So I thought myself, this is just me not knowing anything, I said, oh, after 5 years, it would probably be considered your principal residence.
No.
But that's not true.
No, they got to live in it. For it to be a principal residence, you can't be renting somewhere and having this as secondary product, house to live in. So you have to... Principal residence.
More in the cottage than you do in the rented. Is that what you're saying? You'd have to, or it have to be a 6 month split.
No, you'd have to be living there. I mean, that have to be your principal residence.
Okay.
The only way you can say that it's, and even in that case, they should have done an appraisal when they move into it full time, do an appraisal on that property so that the capital gains stops accumulating as of that appraised amount.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you will have to pay up until that
up
point.
Until then,
up until that point.
Whatever you bought it for.
I know they did an appraisal probably about maybe 10 years ago.
Look at the changes.
Better talk to their accountant and then do another appraisal.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Margaret. You got your two questions. Well, a few more than two, but have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back as we cap off January. Hard to believe.
Just like that, eh?
Hey,
Just like that.
Usually the spring market is starting now, for sure. But the listings don't agree right now.
No, the listings don't agree, but I do think the spring market is going to spring soon.
Little boing.
That's right. So currently today, this morning, active listings in, the area that we typically focus on, we're at 2637, which is extraordinarily low. And so the only
That's lower than Christmas, isn't it?
It is. The only thing I can say that if you are a seller and you are thinking of putting your house on the market, don't be afraid of days on market. Days on market are longer. Your house is not going to get stigmatized. But there is so little for people to choose from that, you might as well get somebody in now and have a conversation and get things started. Because if you're thinking of the spring market, most homes do need some work, right? So you can't just wake up one day in March and say, okay, I'd like to put my house up for sale. There's a lot of preparation that has to go in. And so it's time to start thinking about that now.
So let me ask you this. With 2,600 or so listings, if you don't want to put the work into your house, are you better off listing now when there are fewer listings and less choice?
Interesting perspective. I would think if there are definitely buyers out there today that are looking to buy and that are looking to buy sooner than later. And so if you do have some work to do and there are only three houses to choose from, maybe that's the best strategy. I'm going to say
What's the appetite for fixer-uppers?
Oh, difficult. Some people
borrowing
money
is so expensive now, right?
That's right. Borrowing money is very expensive. You have to have the funds to do the work, and you have to find people to do the work. It's very, very difficult to find contractors right now just because the prices have gone up so, so much. And I think that, it depends on the person. If you are a first-time home buyer, the appetite for a fixer-upper is a little bit less. It's more palatable for someone who has some experience and they're looking for
equity in a home.
And they're looking for, some cosmetic fixes in order to get into a neighborhood that they want to be into. At the present moment, we are still in a market where you can, if you're moving from one home to another, put an offer in conditional on the sale of your own home. So that's a first refusal. And so you can go ahead and you can look for a house, you can put an offer, you can negotiate a contract, and then it is conditional on you being able to sell your house. And I think, for people who can't just go out there and buy, it's a good time to start looking, because I don't know how long those conditions will last.
I was going to say, as we get more and more listings,
that's right.
Does that go away?
I think so. I think so, because if you're a seller, it's, you know, if it's commonplace, it's commonplace. But if you're a seller, it is a bit of a deterrent for some buyers if there is a first refusal in place, because some people think, well, if I go and I like it, then, you know, it, someone else will firm up on it. I think, you know, it's a very good time to take your time and to look at homes and go ahead and buy.
Now, having talked about fixer-uppers, can you go over the Purchase Plus improvements again?
Yeah, I will. You know, it's funny, eh? The way we went through phases, we go through phases, and the DIY was a big thing 5, 6, 7 years ago. Everybody wanted to buy a house.
And cheap money, though.
Watching, yeah.
Watching, you know,
watching
all the
shows. And I could do that. I could do that, and I can bring up the value. And you've seen it diminish tremendously, because you're right. The cost of labor, if you can't do it yourself, or if you need some help on some of the stuff, is very expensive. So, but the Purchase Plus improvement, it's just not taken advantage of as much as it should. Now, I think with interest rates being higher, but it's much tougher to get into it.
Do you not need that equity beforehand? Like, you have to...
Well, yeah, you do. Now, there's some lenders that are starting to open up on it, where they'll give you up to 3 draws on it. So depending on the work you're doing, I mean, if you're only doing a, you know, $5,000 flooring, then, you know, then you're not going to need the 3 draws. But you have to do the work up front. But this is where you find... You know, you either put it on your credit card, knowing that you're going to get the money back. So it's not that bad to
have access. Does it count for, like, painters and things
like
that, too?
It counts for everything except for what you can't get away with is a pool. Because a pool doesn't add value. A hot tub. You know, there's certain things that don't allow.
But anything cosmetic.
But anything that's cosmetic within your house that, again, it has to be within reason. And it has to improve the value of the house. So... You know, you're buying a house for $600,000 and you're doing $50,000 worth of renovations to it. Is the house worth $650,000 once those renovations are completed? So if you're putting a new kitchen in, is the house valued at $600,000 because the kitchen is dated? Or is it $600,000 with a new kitchen? And if it is, then that's where we hit some problems.
But what about roof, windows, that kind of thing?
Everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. Now, again, a roof and windows are expected to be part of, you know, the house you buy, but it's expected, or at least, you know, most default insurers and lenders will say that, you know, if it had new roof and new windows, maybe it would have sold for that $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000, $25,000 more. So
how does it work? Explain to me how it works.
So basically, so let's say you buy a house for $600,000. Again, we'll use the scenario where you buy a house for $600,000. And you're buying it with 10% down. So you're putting a $60,000 down payment on the house. So if you provide us with you just can't say I'm going to put $50,000 into it. It doesn't work that way. At the time that you're making your offer, you should also get somebody in there to give us an estimate, so a contractor, or you can go to the Home Depots, the Ronas, the Lowe's of the world and get, you know, copies of invoices of the work that you're going to be doing. And then what you do is you give that to us at the same time as the purchase agreement. So let's say you bought for $600,000 and you're doing $60,000 worth of renovations. We'll get the mortgage approved for $660,000 with that 10% down. So your down payment goes from 60 to 66, because you also got to put the 10% of the improvements. At the time of closing, the lender will advance 90% of the $600,000, so the $540,000 plus the default insurance. And the rest of the money, so the $60,000 less the 10%, which would be $54,000, sits in a lawyer's trust account. As the work is completed, again, some lenders will allow you to do it in 3 draws. Some will only let you do it in 1. And you typically have 90 to 120 days. We're seeing exceptions to 180 days because it's hard to find tradespeople these days. So we're seeing lenders make exceptions to 180 days. But you can't say, let me borrow this money, because you got to keep in mind you're paying interest on that money. It's sitting at the lawyer's trust, but as far as the mortgage is concerned, it's been advanced. You just don't have it. So, and the mortgage payment is based on the higher amount as well. So that's what you need to know. So you want to get the renovations done as soon as possible. And then once you've completed the renovations, one of two things can happen. You can give us the paid invoices, and then we can provide those to the lender and the default insurer, and they can say, yep, go ahead and move forward and let the lawyer know to give you the money. Or they can say, we want an inspection done. So if an inspection's needed, it's cut $150 to $200. An appraiser will come over and make sure that you did the work that you said you were going to do. And then once they get the green light on that, again, the funds come back to you, and then you can pay off if you used your line of credit or a credit card, or if you got to pay the contractor, the money will be available for you.
But I think that's where working with a real estate professional that, you know, has a lot of experiences and is there and listening to you as a client, there are homes that you can buy that have the bones have been upgraded. So the new roof, the new windows, those are the most important things, I think, when you're looking at, you know, at a purchase, like where have the improvements gone? Have they gone to, you know, a glossy light fixture, or have they gone to new windows?
Second kitchen.
That's right. Yeah.
Which adds value to a home,
it
obviously.
It certainly does. And depends on the neighborhood, but it certainly does. But I think, you know, making sure that you're buying a home that has fewer capital investments that you need to make over the years is going to be very valuable to a buyer.
So can you get the purchase plus improvements and a home equity line of credit all in the same mortgage as you go ahead?
Well, again, depending on the down payment you have. I mean, yeah. The scenario I talked about is a default insured. Now, again, home equity line of credit is only available if you put more than 20% down. So the argument I would make, if somebody says to me, Frank, we're buying a $600,000 home, we want to do $100,000 worth of renovations, and we have a $300,000 down payment. So I would say to them, well, don't put the $300,000 down payment. Mm-hmm. Put the $200,000 down payment.
Yeah.
And now you got your $100,000 to pay for your rentals so that you can do it and pay for it as you go kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it all depends on the scenarios. Usually when we see the purchase plus improvements, it's individuals that have less than 20% down or only have 20% down. And they want to do the upgrade. So then, again, at that point, we might say instead of putting 20% down, put 10% down, mm-hmm. pay the default insurance, and keep the rest of the money to do your rental. So it all depends on your circumstances.
Ray has been waiting for a while. Hello, Ray. How can we help you?
Yeah, my wife and I are going to move to a senior home. And we had planned to move when we get a rental and then move everything out of the house. We have a smoking house. Unfortunately,
okay.
I've heard from a real estate agent that people don't even bother going to look in the house if they know it's a smoking house. Now she's given me an estimate of like $20,000. I don't want to be borrowing $20,000 to fix up the house. We have we just installed a brand new furnace, four-stair furnace. We have new windows installed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Our roof is 7 years old.
Sounds
everything
like a great
house. Everything is done in the house but the floors. The floors are all hardwood floors that never been touched since we moved in 32 years ago. So,
but you can bomb this house, right?
You can. There are.
No, not
like an actual bomb.
B-A-L-M.
It's like a chlorine bomb.
There's a service that can come in and bomb the house and essentially take out the smoke smell and mm-hmm. do everything that they need to do. But I think if you are going to be selling the home vacant, mm-hmm. As long as it's disclosed, because there's, you know, as long as it's disclosed in the realtor marks, or if your realtor is speaking to other realtors as they come in, there are a lot of solutions that a buyer can do.
Why does
it doesn't have to be disclosed because I guess it's vacant. It doesn't have to be disclosed. It's just that there will be people who will not purchase the house. And if they're not living in it, then it's not disturbing them. But if you are living in it and you're getting prepared for showings and somebody walks in the door and it smells like cigarette smoke. So that's what I meant by disclosing.
But the bombing is temporary, isn't it? Like, does it eliminate the smell forever, or is it few weeks?
It does. I've heard that it eliminates it. I do think it needs to be painted and everything else.
Right.
It does affect the value of the home. It really does.
Yeah. The sad part is we repainted it 3 years ago. It's spick and span. The only hardships are the floors and the we don't smell the smoke because we're both smokers.
Right.
And I've heard from another gentleman who had that smoke thing done, and there was still a smell of smoke. So you're in a catch-22. How much money you want to spend, and how much are you going to make out of that spending? And I don't want to borrow money. And I don't want to take my investments.
No.
But until I mean, my house is sold.
I forget how much the bomb is. I think it's like $1,200 or something.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad.
Maybe a closer to $35,000, $5,000. Yeah, I think it's a little bit more. It depends on the size of the home.
Yeah, of course.
But it depends on the size of the home.
This is a bungalow,
but I think, too, like the things in your home that attracted to you to it 32 years ago are going to be what attracts somebody else. And if you have a bungalow, those are in disproportionately high demand. So I would say take your things out to get rid of all soft window coverings, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then because you have the newer roof, because you have the newer windows, because you have, you know, the type of property people are looking for, that's going to be advantageous.
And before you do anything, get an agent in to make sure it's worth it.
I have had an agent.
Get a good one.
Yeah.
She was very forceful. You know, you got to.
I know a pretty good one.
I don't like forceful real estate agents. I know they're trying to get you out and sell the house, but she was quite forceful.
Yeah, well, interview
a second and third opinions.
Yeah,
I think this is your biggest investment that you're putting on the market. So you got to deal with somebody you're very comfortable and enjoy working with.
You got to trust them.
And we put a lot of money into it, and we live in Enville Acres, so we have a lot of property.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, yeah. And I have a detached garage that's completely functional.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that you really want to buy, but I'm worried about the cigarette smoke, and that's my goal.
Sell to a smoker.
The role of...
We got to move on, Ray. We got to move on, bud.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so best time to list your home. I know most people will say yesterday. But with listings being so low right now, is there a better time to get your home on the market?
Listings are down. There's definitely an opportunity to sell your homes, and we're seeing a lot of positivity and a pretty robust start to the 2024 market, for sure.
So do you want to get in now before the listings all of a sudden? I mean,
less competition means that your home will get sold. And if you have a very, very nice home to sell, there are buyers out there, and there's nothing to say there's not going to be more than one interested party in your home.
Yeah. My take would be if interest rates, and all signs are pointing to them coming down over the next few months, if interest rates come down, I would assume the listings go up. Plus the time of year we're in.
The time of year will play an effect. The interest rates will definitely play an effect on the number of listings, but currently it's an opportune time to get a house up, because just even now my phone has been ringing off the hook with buyers, honestly, in the last couple of weeks.
So these rate holds.
Rate holds are very optimistic.
And the forecast is looking bright.
The forecast is looking bright. I think it's going to be a very, very exciting year in 2024 for real estate. We've gone through so many ups and downs, and I think both buyers and sellers are a lot more informed, and I think it's going to be a good time.
How do you feel about the rates?
What do I feel about the rates? Boy, Bank of Canada held flat this week, expected to hold flat again in March, maybe a cut in April, likely a cut in June, but then is when all the fun begins for consumers. So if you've got a mortgage that's maturing, and you have to renew prior to later in the year, so you're renewing in early part of 2024, I would say that strongly consider taking a variable rate mortgage instead of a five-year fix, because you're not going to be able to get out of that five-year fix without a heavy penalty. And if the economists are correct, and we're going to see significant rate drops towards the second half of 2024 and even bigger rate drops in 2025, at least with the variable rate mortgage, you'll have the opportunity to be able to convert it to a fixed. So you might pay a little bit of a premium for the first 6 months, 9 months, but you'll be rewarded very, very nicely for 5 years after that with a lower rate.
And the five-year fix went up this week, didn't it?
Five-year fix went up a little bit because the bond markets are going up, because in the U.S., their economy is doing significantly better than it is here.
So we're back over five now?
We're back over five, unfortunately. Yep.
It was so nice for that little
window. It was, but it's coming back. And I'll tell you, I mean, I would not be surprised if by the end of 2024 we're into the threes.
Really?
I really think that we're going to see some significant drops towards the second half of this year.
Which will drive the prices up.
Should.
So It'll drive interest up, and there'll be more. It'll be more affordable to purchase a home.
Yeah, my fear on that is that people are accruing credit card debt, and therefore that'll hold them back from being able to buy houses. So that's my fear right now. People aren't able to save like they used to. And first-time home buyers, I think there's a bunch of them sitting on the sidelines, but they're struggling to save that down payment that they need to be able to buy because the cost of living is so expensive today.
Birthdays.
Got a couple. Victoria Sousa celebrating her birthday, good friend of the family. Lillian Eid, who just joined us from TD, celebrated her birthday this week. My son Stefano Napolitano celebrating his birthday on Monday. And want to give out a big shout-out to Joe Ranieri and all the staff of Villa Marconi. I happened to attend a scotch tasting event last night.
And you made it in today?
And I made it in today with amazing food. And they raised some good money again for Villa Marconi, which is a home for Italian seniors to live at. And boy, if they don't get a lot of money from the government for meals and stuff. So every little bit helps. So congratulations to Joe. And I'm holding a poker tournament in honor of my dad who passed away, raising money for Villa Marconi Hospice and for the Ottawa Food Bank. So March 22nd, you can go on our website, mortgagebrokersottawa.com/charity. If you like playing poker, and again, the money's all going to three amazing charities.
And what was the best scotch?
The best scotch, boy. Five of them that we tasted. So there was a Bushmill one, which was very light. Really good scotch.
I don't drink scotch.
What's your favorite wine?
Just putting it out there.
She's a wine girl.
How do we get a hold of you, Dora?
Dora@paulrushforth.com. Or 613-791-7875.
Frank N.
MortgageBrokersOttawa.com.
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks. Support local business and charities, everyone.